Om Jnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 3, Text 6. Kamendriyani Sangyamya Ya Aste Manasasmaran Indriyartan Vimurdhatma Mithyachara Sauchate. One who restrains the senses and organs of action, but whose mind dwells on sense objects, certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. Purport. There are many pretenders who refuse to work in Krishna consciousness, but make a show of meditation, while actually dwelling within the mind upon sense enjoyment. Such pretenders may also speak on dry philosophy in order to bluff sophisticated followers. But according to this verse, these are the greatest cheaters. For sense enjoyment, one may act in any capacity of the social order. But if one follows the rules and regulations of his particular status, he can make gradual progress in purifying his existence. But he who makes a show of being a yogi while actually searching for the objects of sense gratification must be called the greatest cheater, even though he sometimes speaks of philosophy. His knowledge has no value because the effects of such a sinful man's knowledge are taken away by the illusory energy of the Lord. Such a pretender's mind is always impure, and therefore his show of yogic meditation has no value whatsoever. This verse and purport is potentially most discouraging for those who are attempting to practice Krishna consciousness. You can turn the light off now. We've read this. No need to have the light off. Most of the statements of Bhagavad Gita. Sorry? Light on. Okay. We have another consideration. Tamasima Jyotir Gamaya. Yeah, most of the statements in Shastra, they encourage us to take up Krishna consciousness and practice it. But this statement is potentially discouraging. It speaks of one who's acting as if in Krishna consciousness or as if a spiritualist, but whose mind dwells on sense objects. So such person is called a mithyachara, means a false performer. Means he's following achar. Achar means, achar is, if it's used, the term is used just like that. It actually means behavior. But if used on its own, it usually means sadacha. There's also duracha, which is the opposite of sadacha. Sadacha means following the rules and regulations for spiritual advancement. And duracha means behaving like a rascal. Sheiposho boro duracha. Nitaina bolilo muke, mojilo shangshara shuke, bidda kule ki koribeta. What's the line before? Anyway, it's the Sheiposho. Heno nite binai bhai radha krishna paitinai. Sheiposho boro duracha. Those who are not devotees of Nityananda Prabhu, they are, according to Narottam Das, which is according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, as good as the Vedic version, they are simply animals and rascals. So one is enjoined to follow sadacha. Sadacha can mean simply not misbehaving. That's the lowest definition of sadasa, to just not do anything grossly wrong. But particularly means to follow spiritual discipline. So here we have the word mithyachara. Means false proper behavior, which is explained in the verse itself, that one behaves properly but is thinking of sense gratification. Now, as I say, this could be discouraging because it is much easier to behave properly than to control the mind. The idea is that by behaving properly, then gradually the mind, by bringing the body under control, then gradually the mind should come under control also. And then when body and mind are both engaged in the service of Krishna, then that is the complete perfection of life. So, practically, it's the whole process of sadhana bhakti is meant for purification of the mind, so that the savayamana krishna padaravindayoho, in the very beginning, the mind should be brought to Krishna. But the whole process of sadhana is to purify the mind. So it's understood that the mind is not pure. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any question of performing sadhana bhakti. As Krishna says in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, just think of me always. But then he says, if you can't do that, then follow the rules and regulations that are, before by doing so, you will attain a desire to serve me. So it's understood that the mind is not fixed on Krishna for those who are performing sadhana bhakti. So that the mind is not completely pure is not a disqualification for performing sadhana bhakti. In one sense, it's the qualification. Our disqualification for always thinking of our disqualification that we don't always think of Krishna is our qualification for performing, well, the desire to come to that platform, knowing ourselves to be not spontaneously on that platform, that is the very reason for taking up the process of sadhana bhakti. So let's read the next verse also, because the next verse is more encouraging. Yes, trindriyani manasa niyam yarabhate arjuna kamindriyai karma yogam asakta savishishyate. On the other hand, he who controls the senses by the mind and engages his active organs in works of devotion without attachment is by far superior. So one who takes up the process of Krishna consciousness seriously is superior to a false meditator. Actually, in this verse which we're reading today, this is particularly referring to people who make a show of stopping all activity, because this was Arjuna's predicament. He couldn't understand that Krishna wanted him to. This chapter begins with Arjuna asking, why do you want me to engage in this ghastly warfare? If you say that inaction is better than action, then why do you want to engage me in this ghastly warfare? So Krishna is explaining how action in Krishna consciousness, which is the title of the fifth chapter, Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness. So how action is better than inaction. That properly directed action is better than inaction. Inaction is better than wrong action. But properly directed action is better than inaction, because Krishna has just stated, Nahi kaschit kshanamapi jatu tishtatya karma krit. Not even for a moment can anyone cease to act. So to actually not act at all is not possible. Even if you're meditating, you may think, I'm just sitting and meditating, I'm not performing any action. But that's also mental action. And there's also breathing. So if you're breathing, that's also some activity. This verse which we're reading today is not meant to discourage sincere sadhakas, those who are practicing Krishna consciousness, trying to become improved. But it is lambasting the position of those who simply make a show of meditation, but who are actually thinking of sense gratification. Some of them are open about it. Just like Hiranyakashipu was performing austerity, but his aim was to get power for sense gratification. So, in one sense, he wasn't mithyachari, because he was honest about it. So what is better, to be an honest demon or a dishonest demon, someone who pretends to be a spiritualist but just does everything for the sake of sense gratification? Just to cite some praman in this regard, the recent blockbuster hit Hindi movie, Oh My God, which features bhogi yogis, or persons who make a show of being spiritual to deliberately fool the public and live very comfortably. So such persons are rascals. But someone who seriously takes up Krishna consciousness, despite their struggling, they are glorious. The very fact that even though the mind may not always be engaged in the most glorious kind of thoughts, but the very attempt to practice Krishna consciousness is glorious. The fact that one has bad thoughts in the mind, that's not glorious, but the fact that one is attempting to overcome them, that is glorious, and Krishna will appreciate that. So, therefore, in the process of sadhana bhakti, there are prescribed activities. With the idea to keep one always busy in Krishna's service. Because, as Srila Prabhupada would sometimes quote, an idle mind is a devil's workshop. So everyone should be engaged in Krishna consciousness all the time. Because if there's a break, then we tend to fill it up with nonsense. So if we have time out of our busy schedule of performing Krishna conscious activities, then we should fill it up with Krishna conscious activities. Reading Srila Prabhupada's books, chanting extra rounds, there's always some service to do. So sometimes we talk about practical service as compared to activities of hearing and chanting. Not that these activities are impractical, but they don't immediately in a manifest way affect any improvement in the Krishna conscious condition of the world, or apart from improvement, there are also activities of maintenance. There's cleaning and repairing and so many things. So these are called, this is called practical service. And in contrast, there's not impractical service, but we can say just basic activities of sadhana, hearing and chanting. So we should always be busy in Krishna's service with regulated activities. Centers of our movement, they've introduced these sadhana sheets, so that shows what you're doing at every moment of the, or at least in the morning program. So that's to see how many rounds you're chanting in time. If during the whole japa period you only chant 4 rounds, that means that that you have either fallen asleep, or the mind is distracted, or you're doing something which you're not really meant to be doing at that time. So that shows that. So you have to fill in your form. So at least out of fear of not wanting to appear as if you're sleeping or spacing out, to use classic ISKCON slang, that one should try and stay awake and chant your rounds. And then it may be during the day. What did you do during the day? How many hours were you doing this service and that service? How many hours did you read? And so on. So that may be all right for a beginner. But actually, one should come to the platform and shouldn't be after 50 years, that you're already 50 years in the movement and you're still filling up your sadhana chat. But it should be that you should come to the platform of being trustworthy enough that when there's no one watching you and you have some spare time, that you don't go on the internet and watch some pornography or simply space out in various ways. But that one will use one's time in Krishna's service, either with some practical service or with some extra sadhana or whatever. Keeping busy in Krishna's service is excellent for keeping the mind busy. And Srila Prabhupada would give his disciples challenges and double book distribution every year. That's not a very easy thing to do, even in the first year. And it gets progressively or geometrically difficult each year, as the story goes of the man who wanted the man who was asked for, the king asked him to take a boon, and he asked for one grain of, I guess in Vedic times it would be barley, on the chessboard, square, and on the second one 2, and on the next one 4, and the next one 16, like this. So it's not exactly the same as doubling it each year, but anyway, the king thought it was an easy thing, but he found out that to fill up the last square, what to speak of all that before it, there were not enough grains in his whole kingdom, because it becomes an astronomical figure. So if we were to double book distribution each year, it's a great challenge. Prabhupada gave many challenges to his disciples that in a full set of Prabhupada's books should be in the home of every gentleman in America. Although exactly American gentleman, it's like an oxymoron. which means a contradictory. When the adjective doesn't fit with the noun, just like a learned fool, that's a common oxymoron. Although most learned people are fools. Or something like this. Just like people ask, can God create a square circle? But there's no such thing as a square circle, because by definition a circle is not square, so it's a silly question. You think, aha, now I got you caught. Ha ha. Now you have to say no. But you can say, well, he created a mind as perverse as yours. So, you can't see. That's proof of God's omnipotence. So, Prabhupada gave challenges to his disciples. He would send devotees there. 3 weeks in the movement or 2 weeks in the movement, go out to a new center. So then they'll go out with two or three men and open a new center. And then you have to learn immediately everything, because you have to preach and give classes, and so you have to immediately learn everything. So in this way, difficulty can help us to become Krishna conscious. It's not an easygoing life. Aram haram hihe. This comfort is abominable. In Krishna consciousness, easygoing life is not recommended. So we should be always busy in Krishna's service. That will help to control the mind. Now, one of the mottos, or one of the themes of that film, Oh My God, which we may take lessons from. There were some good lessons in it and some wrong ideas in it also. Is that religion is an easy way to cheat people. Religion is the opiate of the people, said Karl Marx. Actually, opium is better than a lot of what goes on in the name of religion, because it's sedative. Whereas in the name of religion, people kill others. Killing animals is common in the name of religion. And killing humans, which is considered much worse. In fact, killing animals is not considered, nothing. People don't think there's anything wrong with it. But killing humans, they think there's something wrong with that. So that has, it's promoted by certain religious systems. In fact, the killing, when from the Christian countries, people discovered America, they call it discovered America, because they didn't know it was there before, although there were human beings already living there. So the Pope did not grant the people already living there the status of human beings until they'd been almost completely annihilated. So it wasn't considered sinful to kill them, because the Pope said they're not really human beings at all. So watch out, you'll be a non-human. If you're not a Christian, then you'll be subject to being killed. That wasn't only in North America, by the way. That was Central America, South America. Genocide. All approved by the Pope. And the slave trade too. So, yeah, in opium would be better than that kind of religion, wouldn't it? People simply become opium addicted and kill themselves, that's better than having a religion which, the mode of ignorance in this sense, is, well, that's a different manifestation. This mass killing, that's a worse manifestation of the mode of ignorance than intoxication. All kinds of things Christians did. I mean, the Chinese, they kicked out the British because the British, they were promoting opium trade. So they've been extremely distrustful of anything Western ever since. Once the British found it's a good business to sell opium in China. So Chinese made a war against them, and luckily for the Chinese, they managed to defeat the British. So, religion is the opiate of the people. Religion is something very bad because it's used to cheat people. And there are many people who use it to cheat others. So yes, we can learn from this that people don't like cheating in the name of religion. And if it becomes severe, then people will start to point it out. Maybe at the risk of their life. Yesterday you were telling me, Gaura Prabhu, about how in the Christian church you have to give some money to get freed from your sins. Well, that was the very reason, or that was a major reason, that the Protestant religion, protest, it comes from the word protest, they protested against the Catholic Church. And one of the main reasons was that they were selling what were called indulgences. That means you commit a sin, then you pay so much money, and then you get free from your sin. So people would take in a prostitute, and then they say, well, I know that's going to cost me. You know, you pay so much for the prostitute, and then you pay a little extra for the, and then you get free from your sin. They have a similar thing in Islam. You can go to a prostitute. You have a because you're not allowed to have sex outside marriage, so you have a temporary marriage. That's how, just for prostitution. So it may not be in every branch of Islam, but it's there. So people don't. Some people got wise to this, and they thought, "This is not religion. This is simply the priests are getting fat and rich, and they probably, you know, they have to. They're also this is, see, there are the priests and the nuns." And they're both making lots of money. So you have these priests who are living like kings, literally. Literally, yes. The Pope was originally, it was not just some head of a church, but he was the emperor. He was ruling, he was a political head. So there are so many tales of between the monastery and the nunnery. The nunnery is the Brahmacharini ashram it's the nearest you could say it in Sanskrit. There's a secret tunnel, and there's dead. So they go, either the nuns go to the priests, or the priests go to the nuns for some spiritual association. And in the tunnel, you'll find skeletons of dead babies, baby skeletons. Because the nuns, they wear this kind of cloth, which, you know, you can wear it in such a way that if it's very loose, you can't notice that it's getting a little fatter than usual. And then after 9 months of gradually getting fatter, then there's an abandoned baby in the tunnel. And so these kind of things are going on, or used to go on at least. And people became disgusted with this, and they started the Protestant religion. Not that you can't get rascals in Protestantism, but one of the things they have is that no celibacy is not allowed or not encouraged, and the priests, they're also married, so in this way they hope to get around a lot of cheating. Of course, they get around a lot of cheating, but at the same time they don't have any real they don't have any sannyasi types or people who are completely dedicating themselves in Krishna God consciousness or whatever. Surrender to Maya. They say, well, and then they say that, well, actually, it's sex within marriage, it's God's gift. So it's something in their whole philosophy. I mean, anyway, if we talk about Christian philosophy, then that's another oxymoron. So the point I was making is that cheating in the name of religion, it won't be appreciated. People who are more serious or who are looking for something good, they won't like that. So sometimes it's said it's better to be an honest householder than a cheating sannyasi, which is actually a fact. But it doesn't mean that every sannyasi is cheating. Sometimes we hear devotees in our movement say, well, at least I'm fallen, but I'm honest. At least I'm not pretending to be something that I'm not. But that supposes that everyone who is taking up a life of serious Krishna consciousness is cheating. And it may be there also. That someone is, well, apart from sannyasis, and in my experience, I know quite a few of the sannyasis in our movement, personally, which most of you don't, but in my experience I can say that sannyasis, they are following the principles of sannyas, and seriously dedicating themselves to spreading Krishna consciousness. They're not just taking money and living comfortably. There may be some cases like that, but most of them are serious about it, very serious about it. But there may be people who are householders and living comfortably, build a temple, and give a little speech here and there, and then collect money in the name of preaching Krishna consciousness. Now, it's difficult to say, because some activities of Krishna consciousness will be there. In our Krishna consciousness movement, you can't be a you can't be a leader unless you, at least you're not supposed to, unless you follow some basic principles. And if one is breaking those basic principles, then generally one will get removed. But it is possible, especially if one is a leader in a remote center where no one from the institution goes much, no one from outside goes, then you could follow the basic principles, but you could get away with, for instance, not rising early in the morning, maybe not chanting your rounds, maybe watching TV, or just not doing very much at all, just living fairly comfortably, just an easygoing life without much endeavor to really spread Krishna consciousness. And you do a few festivals every year, collect money from the public, and live on the profit throughout the year. So it's possible to do that. And possibly, there are instances of that also. So someone may say, well, at least I'm fallen, but I'm not cheating. Everyone knows I'm fallen. So it's better than just living comfortably and cheating others. Or just running on the institution as a kind of business enterprise. Sometimes we hear sarcastic statements, ISKCON Bangalore Inc. We can say that because there are ideological foes. But in London also sometimes we hear it said, the Manor Private Limited, things like that, because everything's organized in such a way that people come in, they're impressed by the big building and everything, and then there are various schemes for getting their money. So it's very efficient and effective, and they get lots of money, which is not necessarily a bad thing, if the money is used in Krishna's service, strictly only for Krishna. But generally when we see there's high efficiency in getting money, it's not strictly only for Krishna. If one is a householder in Krishna consciousness and living at the expense of the institution, then one should live very simply. One shouldn't lead an opulent life because one is living on funds which are contributed by the public for maintaining the temple, which means the deity should be worshipped most opulently, and for spreading Krishna consciousness. So if one is leading a very opulent life, that's not very good. Although it is possible, Srila Prabhupada showed the example of living in opulent surroundings. Not that he was attached to it. He could, as he showed, I think it was 2 weeks he stayed in Bhubaneswar in early 1977, just before he got very sick. He had opulent mansions all over the world, but he lived in a mud hut and took baths from at the tube well. And there was no latrine, so he was just passing in the field. Now there's no field there. It's all what they call developed. So Srila Prabhupada lived in opulence, but he used that for preaching. And especially he had very opulent quarters in London and in Melbourne. But every day in both those centers, prominent members of the public were brought by his disciples, and they would sit with Prabhupada in that opulent setting, and Prabhupada would preach to them. So he was using that facility for preaching, because people, they like to come to some opulent place, and they're impressed. They give some respect to the person who's the head of such an opulent institution. So that may be used in Krishna's service. But if one is using that, or if one's making such facilities and not vigorously preaching, there may be some preaching, but not vigorously preaching, then there's no need for such opulence. Opulence should be there for the deity, definitely. But otherwise, householders should be prepared to live very simply if they're maintained by the institution. If you're doing your own business, then live as opulently as you like. But you should give to Krishna also. We are not against householders living opulently, but you earn it. You do your own business or whatever and give to Krishna. So this plea that, well, at least I'm living, I'm fallen, but I'm honest about it. I don't pretend. So is that better? Well, not really. It's two wrongs don't make a right. To be fallen is not good. In one sense, even to live comfortably at the expense of the institution, which is not good, but if along with that one is following the principles of Krishna consciousness, then at least you're following something, even if it's for the sake of cheating others in another way. That's not good. But to say, well, I'm fallen, but I'm honest, that's not very good. Especially if one has taken initiation, especially Brahminical initiation, to say, I'm fallen, but I'm honest. Well, to be fallen means you're not honest in the first place, because if you took the Brahminical initiation, or you took initiation to follow all these things and you don't follow, then you're not honest. From the outset, you're not honest. I'm honest about being not honest. What does that mean? It's more oxymorons. So, what do we do? Chant Hare Krishna and dedicate our lives to Krishna, whether grihastha, sannyasi, valnaprastha, brahmachari, whatever. That's all. No need to cheat at any stage. Of course, if we were to tell everyone what's going on our mind at the worst times, well, we'd probably be thrown out anyway. But we can take comfort in the fact that I'm probably not the only one. There wouldn't be any brahmachari ashram if the brahmacharis had to reveal all the worst things that ever happened in their mind. But at least we're trying. So brahmacharis, get up early in the morning, follow the program, engage fully in Krishna's service, and beat that mind with shoes and preach Krishna consciousness and distribute these books and pray for Krishna's mercy. And don't pretend that we're something that we're not. So, Hare Krishna, any question about this, please? Yes. Not quite sure whether you want to ask a question or not. Afraid of getting smashed. Yes.
I've seen like some leaders, they have the sadhana is very nice, but not so much inclination to preach.
Leaders who have sadhana but not much inclination to preach. Well, they're not really a leader of our Sankirtan movement if they're not inclined to preach much. Because leader means it's a preaching movement, so you have to lead by preaching. If you're worried about me just sitting in my room all day, well, I'm writing, so that's another kind of preaching. I mean, I do go out also. Last couple of nights you've organized programs for me to go out and tell people not to worship Sai Baba, to worship Krishna. So, I guess I still qualify for some chapatis, not on today's Ekadashi. So. Earning your keep, as the saying goes. Prachar kore kore keho na kore acha acha kore keho na kore pracha acha pracha name koroho dui karj tumi sarva guru tumi jagater arj. Sanatan Goswami said to Haridas Thakur, and what he said to him actually applies to himself also, that he is the guru of the whole world. Why? Because he preaches and behaves properly in devotional service. Some people preach, but they don't practice what they preach. Some people behave very properly in Krishna consciousness, but they don't preach. So the real guru is one who preaches and acts. Achinoti na yashastrani achare sthapyatyapi swayam acharate yasmad acharyas tena kirtitaha. One is glorified as an acharya if he knows what is in Shastra, teaches what is in Shastra, and acts according to Shastra. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Hare Krishna.
Oh, another question. All right. An afterthought. Oh yes, be careful of them. We congratulate ourselves. Yeah, you're trying to overcome bad thoughts, so don't worry if they're there. That's why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said we have to, on rising in the morning, we have to beat the mind with shoes, and on going to sleep at night, we have to beat it with a broomstick. What does that mean? Because the mind is is it subtle? The mind is subtle and shoes are gross. Well, the mind is pretty gross. That's why we have to beat it. Bhajare, bhajare. Amar mon ati mondo. Bhaja, braja, bane, radha, krishna, charanaravinda. This bhajan of Bhaktivinoda Thakur is the how to beat the mind is the remember all the great devotees. Smara, Srinivasa, Haridasa, Murari, Mukunda. The process is easy. In Krishna consciousness, the process is easy. But the application can be difficult. So, yes, more thoughts popping up out of the causal ocean.
When it says that someone is straightforward, and straightforward in preaching, so does that mean that he is very serious that he is straightforward, telling the thing he may?
What does it mean by being straightforward if he's very serious? Serious and straightforward are not exactly the same. Straightforward, well, it's look it up in the dictionary. It means just saying things as they are. Frankness is a synonym of straightforwardness. You haven't read my book called On Speaking Strongly in Krishna Consciousness. You don't have to, but this is discussed in detail in there. We have to preach the truth. If you don't preach the truth, then what is the meaning of preaching? So we have to be straightforward. We can do it politely also. Two nights ago I said that worshipping Sai Baba is bogus. Unnecessary politely. It's not required to be polite. But as Srila Prabhupada quoted Lord Jesus Christ and saying we should hate the sin but not the sinner. So the people there, many of the people there, I was told by Gaura Prabhu before I went there, to Palakuri, is it? That there are many worshippers of Sai Baba there. So I took up the subject. But I said it in such, it was very clear from what I said, that Sai Baba is bogus. But I said it in such a way so as, unless they themselves are totally bogus, that they wouldn't become offended. So there may be ways of doing it also. But it may be also very good to say, he's just totally bogus. He's cheating. You can tell them also. that many people are misled. They must have some bad tendency in them to even be attracted to him. Him means there are two Sai Babas, but the second one claimed to be an incarnation of the first, is it? So, even to be attracted to him, you must be somewhat bogus yourself to be attracted to that. But we find many people who call themselves Sai Baba followers, I think especially of Satya more than Shirdi, they'll take our books, isn't it? Is it more Satya than Shirdi? Or the same? No particular difference. So they'll take our books, and they like to come to our satsangs like this. They're under the gross misunderstanding, gross delusion that Krishna and Sai are the same. But they have some tendency toward Krishna consciousness. So maybe the first time we could be somewhat polite with them. Not every time. If they remain attached to that, then you should just tell them this man's a total cheat. The funny thing is that he was exposed even during his lifetime, this Satya Sai Baba, as for being a cheater, his manifesting watches was shown to be a magic trick, which any magician can do. They're trained to do it. He was shown to be a pedophile. But still, I saw one documentary made by the BBC, and it started off like praising Sai Baba, but then it changed and showed him to be a pedophile. But then it showed one of his so-called devotees from America, who was a very rich man and had donated lots of money for his hospital and everything else. And an intelligent man, and he was asked that, you know, all these accusations against Sai Baba, and it's shown that there's ample evidence for it, why do you still support him? And the man said, well, whatever anyone may say, as far as I'm concerned, Sai Baba is God. So, if people are determinedly stupid, there's not much you can do. But at least you can try to. At least you should try and tell them that this is completely bogus. Try to convince them. You can tell them it's all bogus.
One Satya
Sai Baba said that ISKCON devotees are his greatest devotees. There was some when Prabhupada was preaching in America, there was some Bal Yogeshwar who was known as Guru Maharaji, who said something similar. He said, "You should go to the." He told his followers, "You should go to the Hare Krishna devotees to see how to properly worship me." And they would take books also, because he said he's Krishna. So, but they were not very serious people, because if you go to cheat people, you'll get useless people. You get followers according to how seriously and sincerely you act and you preach and you are. So if you make things very easy, and yourself you're not very strict, and you say, well, listen, we're increasing the preaching, we're making so many followers, but what's the use? It's just like the rabbit says to the tigress that, you see, you only have one child a year, and I have dozens. And the tigress said, yeah, but your children are rabbits and mine is a tiger. So, ekas chandras tamohanti kingna tara sahasrasaha. One moon can light the whole sky. What is the use of millions of stars? So you can increase the followers by, say, well, chant 16 rounds. Try to chant 16 rounds. And you don't have to follow anything very strict. Or maybe it'll go, you can chant 4 rounds or just... Anyway, take the beads and get initiated because I need to have more disciples. Instead of the disciple begging the guru, please give me initiation, the guru is begging... Please, I had this experience once. I was in Thailand, and I was in some monastery in a remote part of Thailand, northeast Thailand. And the monk, the head abbot there, he spoke a little English, which is quite uncommon among Thais, especially in that remote area. So I was staying in his monastery because you have to have somewhere to stay. We're distributing books. We means I was. I was the traveling Sankirtan party. So he was like entreating me, please become my disciple. Just for one day. And then he came down for 1 hour, you see, because in Thai Buddhism, you become a monk for a short time. That's all. So he said, just for 1 hour, you see, become my disciple. He just wanted to take a photo with me, that's all. So he could put it on the wall. He said, you don't have to follow anything. You just become my disciple, put on the monk's dress, and I know he wants to take a photo. He didn't say that. That's all. So we shouldn't be so cheap. Keep the standard pure. Otherwise, you know, going around hunting any living entity that walks in the door, initiate them. There's no meaning. A woman in this area claiming to be an incarnation of Krishna. A woman. So a woman in this area claiming to be an incarnation of Krishna. So you can go up to her and say that, oh, Bhagavan, Bhagavati, I guess. You have to call her a female. Say that, you know, actually, we have great faith in you. And, you know, many people are criticizing you. But we have great faith that actually you are Krishna. But people don't believe it. So just to prove it, We'll arrange for you to demonstrate that you are Krishna. So, just like Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, of course it's Kali Yuga, so you may have lost some of your powers. So, we won't ask you to lift a hill, but we'll just, with a crane, we'll get a big rock, and we'll lower it gently onto your finger, and then you can just hold it for a few seconds. Okay? And then you can prove that you're Krishna. So that's good. You can video this. And she won't agree because she won't be able to hold it. If she did agree, then she'd be crushed to death by the big rock. So like that, you can expose. Could you do something? They'll say, show your Vishwarup. No, you're not qualified. You're not like Arjuna. Then you hold up a Govardhan Hill. Everyone could see. Register, you can have, ask some local lawyer to register a cheating case. No one ever made a cheating case against Satya. Must have been, someone must have made it. Satya Sai Baba, they must have made a cheating case because he's calling. But he would say, I don't call myself God, my followers do. That's smoking ganja through someone else's hand. They made posters of him with the Vishwarupa. It's easy to make posters. Jimi Hendrix did that also. He went to show, he announced he's going to show his Vishwarupa. So many people came to the airport. Which airport? put the party. There's an airport there. For his own private jet, I guess. So they have scheduled flights on, maybe they have charter flights there. Everyone's, or many people came. But because there were so many clouds, he said it's not possible to show it now.
So then they came back to his ashram. So that so many people are there, so he visited. So that then one type of visited, some people are.
So some people got convinced that he's a cheater. I mean, I myself, I don't need all this. I just. Just like this Sri Sri Ravi Shankar, I don't need to know what his teachings are. Just looking at him, you can understand he's a cheater. And then if you hear his voice, effeminate voice, if you don't eat a meal before you listen to him because you'll vomit. The Russians are giving blessings to the Christians. So what happened? So Sri Sri Ravi Shankar is trying to combat Christian cheating with his own form of cheating. Don't worship Jesus, worship me. They're all cheating. That's why I didn't like, you had a big picture of me on the poster, but not a big picture of Prabhupada. Better you have a picture of Krishna. I guess the white Swami is some kind of attraction. But we don't want to make a wrong impression. We want to bring people to Krishna. Not that we make there some big Bhakti Vikas cult or something like that. You can do that also, but the kind of people who come to that, the kind of guru worship, then they also, guru worship is central in Krishna consciousness, no doubt. But if you promote it as, if you promote that as a, as the major principle to neophytes, then they'll remain neophytes forever. They should know what it means to accept a guru. It means you have to accept discipline, you have to understand the teachings, you have to practice Krishna consciousness seriously, and then because you feel, you experience the happiness of Krishna consciousness in doing so, therefore you're very grateful to the guru. But if from the beginning you just make it worship the guru, but there's nothing there, then it's something like Sai Baba. So you can use that as a kind of preaching ploy, and you can get maybe some neophyte devotees in numbers, but it doesn't really serve the purpose. And you, yeah, then you get a whole parampara of people who, they can be the figures in that Oh My God movie. It's the same thing, you know. You know, just guru, guru, guru. And you'll find these, that when the guru comes, then they're all out there, all the disciples. Just, Guru Dave! And then the moment he's gone, they're gone also. And you don't see them till next time he comes. Or they come around on Janmashtami and when the guru comes, and that's all. And the rest of the time, they're sitting at home. Maybe they're chanting a little japa. So some benefit is there. Chanting japa while they're watching TV. And so, better not to promote that kind of thing.
Similar.
Yeah, I've heard this before. This guru is very merciful because he'll accept people even in low standards. But I understand the mercy of a guru is to bring people up. It's not that you can practice Krishna consciousness at a low standard and get the same result as practicing at a high standard. That you don't have to follow and just you get guru mercy and then you get everything. But that's not the process of Krishna consciousness that we learn from our guru, Rupa Goswami. He gives standards that you have to follow, and that's why you accept a guru, because he teaches you to follow the standards. So, because you become purified. If you say it's all guru's mercy, then it's the same as Sai Baba. It's the same mentality. You don't have to do anything, just you get Baba's mercy, that's all. So this whole idea that just guru kripa and that's all. Then you get a sahajiya cult. In course of time it will come to be a cult. Already the mentality is like that. That you don't have to follow anything very strictly. Just the guru does everything for you. That's all. It's against the principle of bhakti to have such a mentality. Rather one that means it's institutionalized insincerity. And it's promoting insincerity by preaching like this. You don't have to follow much. You can worship demigods. You can go to kami movies. You should go. Before it was you can go. Now it is you should go. You can go to kami restaurants. Now you should go. That's also there. Because you got the guru kripa. That's all. But guru kripa means to tell you not to do these things. That's his actual mercy. So you're promoting the wrong thing. So the whole thing becomes rotten. Many cheaters claim they're incarnations of Dattatreya. Well, I guess Dattatreya is popular. He also kept dogs, so that in Vedic culture, one who keeps dogs inside the house is a chandal. So I guess if you say you're an incarnation of Dattatreya, then you can do anything you like. Because with chandal, there are no rules and regulations. Actually, Dattatreya is an incarnation of Vishnu, but especially in Andhra, yeah. They claim to be an avatar of Dattatreya. They're not claimed to be incarnations of Rama, because